Okay, this is for Wednesday Shandell Signs class.
There you go.
Okay, so I have all your copies from the last 2 days for those of you that gave it back in. Personally, I prepared, there's more in the packet that we haven't gotten to, but I feel like I want to move on and do another topic because we're running out of time. So I will give you back, those of you that have your copies are invited to keep them. Those of you that don't have them, I'll give them back to you. And if you're concerned about the Hebrew portions, about worrying about how to dispose of the Hebrew, then give me back the Hebrew. And then there's still so much English stuff that's not shameless that you don't have to worry about disposing. That this way you can, you know, enjoy that at your leisure. Because there's so much. Like I said, like I just tend to go on and on and on and on. But I feel like that's so. There's some here. You have. So I don't know who gave and who didn't. Okay. So those are the first topic, and here is the next topic. Okay. So we'll start with the new booklet. So I think I just want to sum up the last topic of gratitude with a story that I had heard that I think just brings it all together. There was a man, Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gussman, who was a Rosh Yeshiva. He headed a yeshiva in Brooklyn. Again, history is not my thing, but he was a survivor of the Holocaust. I guess that gives you some kind of an idea, a time frame of when he lived. He's since passed, and actually I have a first cousin in Israel who's named after him because apparently my uncle learned at his yeshiva for a time. I don't know exactly the story, but there's some family connection apparently. And prior to the war, he had been in Europe, and he had been going on a walk, some kind of excursion with his rabbinic advisor. And while they were walking out, and the rabbinic advisor was pointing out to him the different foliage and the different things that were growing. And he was pointing out, naming everything, you know, this is called a this and that's called a that. This is edible, this isn't, this is poisonous, this is safe. And at the time he, you know, remembers that he was thinking, you know, such an odd thing for, you know, this rabbi to be discussing, but okay, whatever, you know, I guess he's interested in foliage, he's interested in botany. So it was just, you know, an interesting conversation that they were having. And then it turned out that once the war started and he was on the run and he was in hiding, he was actually able to use that information that the rabbi had, you know, supposedly for no reason shared with him. And he was actually able to survive the war by hiding out in the forest and knowing which foliage was dangerous and which would be edible and help him to survive. And he was forever grateful for that knowledge that he had and to the foliage for, you know, really saving him. He would have not made it at all. That to the point of when he made it after the Holocaust and he made it to Jerusalem and he opened up his own study hall and he opened up his own yeshiva, he took upon himself to be the gardener of the yeshiva. And that he took upon himself the responsibility of tending to all the plants and everything that was growing on the grounds of the yeshiva because he felt such intense gratitude to the foliage for having saved his life. So again, you know, just to bring everything full circle, even inanimate objects, you know, though they have no feelings and desire and they're not doing it for their benefits, all those excuses that we learned over the last 2 days, all those excuses why we shouldn't have to thank them, was something that he was so grateful for. And I think it just goes also to show the level that he was at and the level that we can strive to, that it's within our reach. And as we've discussed, that anytime we talk about different midos, different characteristics, and we emulate and we strive to grow, and what we're trying to discuss are not things that are far-flung. These are things that we can really, we can get to that level. We can really recognize and be able to be grateful for even the small things in our life. So with that, we move on to another pasuk. I said, well, we might do only one pasuk, but we'll do a lot of information. It's cute, because like a lot of times when I'm teaching, my class will say, oh, we learned that already. And I'll be like, yeah, you think you learned that already, but there's only one layer. And if you come back, we'll have to go through more and more layers. So maybe we could even, I'm sure, reintroduce this topic at another time and fulfill some more of, you know, the information. So let's start now with the second plague. The second plague is Tzfardea. The second plague is frogs. So the quote from the pasuk is, Vayet Aaron es yado al meimei Mitzrayim. And Aaron raised his hand over the waterways of Mitzrayim. Vata'al ha-Tzfardea. And the frog came up. Vatechas es eretz Mitzrayim. And it covered the land of Mitzrayim. It covered all over Egypt. There were frogs. But again, you know, not to discuss, we know that it was Aaron who did it and why. We discussed that last time. What we're going to focus on is the Rashi that says, Vata'al ha-Tzfardea. And the frogs, which is translated here in plural. It's really inaccurate. Ha-Tzfardea achas haisa. There was one frog that came out. So, you know, in English, when we pluralize word, there's one fish, two fish, right? But you have one frog, two frogs. The pasuk, when it talks about the frog coming up, should have said tzfardeim in the plural, as it does say later on in the other verses. So here we see that there was one frog that came up, and the entire plague stemmed from one frog. V'hayu makin osa, the mitzrim would see the frog and hit it. V'hi matezes nechilim nechilim, and by hitting the frog, more and more frogs exploded and came about. So let's try to understand what's happening here. There's a frog. And they had just been told, they were warned, that a plague of frogs is going to be upon them. They see the frog, they get upset, they get angry. So their instinct is to hit the frog because they want to chase it away. They want to kill it. It doesn't work because each time they hit a frog, more frogs populate and more frogs spring out from them. So they get angrier. So they hit the frogs. What happens? More frogs come out. So they get angrier yet still. And they keep on hitting those frogs and more frogs come about. So we see what I'm trying to expand upon here is the lesson of ka'as, of anger. How what they were doing was counteractive to what they wanted, yet because of their anger, they were unable to control of themselves. They wanted to stop the frogs, they wanted to get it away, yet they proceeded to do the same thing that was causing them to suffer with what they were trying to get rid of the suffering of. So we see the dangers and the hazards of ka'as, of anger, and what happens when a person gets angry, and how when we lose control of ourselves, different things that can go wrong, and how we want to work on being in control of our feelings, of our emotions. So page 2, which is the back of the page, page 11, is taken from Ethics from Sinai, from a book by Rabbi Amos Bunim, which is from Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers, which are read, 7 chapters, which are read in the weeks from Pesach until Shavuos, the 7 weeks, and then there's a custom that even from Shavuos until Rosh Hashanah, over the 7 months, we go in order, read chapters 1 through 7, and then once the cycle is complete, we repeat it as many times as is necessary until we get to Rosh Hashanah, the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. And it's explained that Ethics of Our Fathers is important teachings of the Torah, brought down stories and parables and expressions from the rabbis, from the Mishnah, so that would be the Tanaim, from that generation of people, and it's ways, guides for life, of ways that we can improve on our character traits and work on upon ourselves to become better people, especially over the summer when things tend to be more free, more lax, when we need to just be a little bit more aware of ourselves. So we're going to start on the bottom of page 11. Who is strong? Ezehu Gibar. He who subdues his evil inclinations. Hakovesh es Yitro. Somebody who is strong is somebody who conquers their inclination. We all have images in our minds of strong people, people who have physical strength, and people who seem to be very, very strong, to seem very, very powerful. In any ways, it could be a physical way, it could be a political way. There's all kinds of strength. But there's something that we have within us, that's inside of us, that we all are struggling with on a daily basis, and that is our Yetzer Hara. That is the, you know, that inner voice that tries to convince us to do those things that we don't want to be doing, or it helps us to rationalize sometimes the things that we're doing. And every day we have a battle. Some days are easier than others. Some days are harder. Some days we're able to withstand it more than others. But there are things within us that are challenging for us, that are hard for us, that we face in terms of ourself, in terms of our personal growth. Not necessarily in terms of our life situation, although those can be intertwined. They can be connected. What, you know, what goes on in our life can also affect our equilibrium and our ability to make decisions or to stay in control of our decision-making abilities. But it tells us no two people are quite alike. Every human being has his unique temperament and therefore develops his individual temptations, desires, and passions. So we all might be similar in some respect. We all have desires. We all have wishes. We all have wants. But because we are different people and because our makeup is different, the percentage for each of us, it would be different, right? So we all have a level of being able to get angry. Some might be on a lower scale. Some people anger less. Some people anger more quickly. And again, there would be certain things which would trigger us, which would make us more angry than other times, and other things are less of a big deal to us. And those things are so personal because of our experiences, because of the things that we've gone through. Certain things will matter more to us. It will be more of almost like a cause or a, you know, a reason why this happened, or a principle for us. And certain things which people will look at us like, seriously? Get a grip on it. You know, what's the big deal? Like, really? Like, why are you making a mountain out of a molehill? But if you don't know where that person is coming from, it's hard for you to understand that, because to you it seems so insignificant. One person will play cards until the wee hours of the morning. Another will remain glued to the television set. You could see when this book was written, you know, who calls it a television set, you know? Like, who even has a television anymore, right? Everyone has, you know, devices, you know? The third will indulge erotic desires insatiably. A fourth will do anything for a dollar. Note that the Mishnah uses the term Yitzro, his inclination. Who is strong, asks Ben Zoma? One who can control his desires. One who can say no to his passions. Those that are indigenous to him. And again, we can all be, you know, the higher and mighty and look at someone else and say, well, if that was me, I wouldn't have been upset. Or if that was me, I wouldn't have done that. I would have responded X, Y, and Z and not A, B, and C. And that's, you know, that's all very nice, but that's really, frankly, irrelevant. Right? It's irrelevant to the situation what you think is the right behavior, because everyone has to fight for, you know, their own causes and their own triumphs and their own tribulations. And we're all put into this world with different abilities, different strengths, different weaknesses, and it is our job in this world to work on those abilities and to strengthen our abilities and to become stronger against those things which set us back, which are our vices. And those are things which, again, nobody can judge us for, and we can't judge other people for. And when we try to figure out, like, what is our purpose in the world? Like, why was I put here? Try to process. Okay, that's great. I'm here. Now what? So we're so often told that those very things which are hard for us, that's sort of an indication. That's a little bit of a, you know, like a map that helps us to say, okay, this is the road you're taking. This is what's hard for you. These are the things that you're in this world that you're here to set straight for yourself. And these are the things which you're going to need to work on to become the best you that you're trying to become. And we all want to be that best person, the best image of ourselves that we can be. And those are the things that we'll focus on. So being that Kaas is one that comes up, again, I'm not here to, you know, we all have our angry moments. We all have our times when things are challenging for us, different blow-ups that we have, you know. Right now, I can think back to a time in my life where it's comical now. It was, you know, I guess it, in a way it was funny at the time, too. But I remember, you know, as a young sibling, I was probably, I don't know, definitely old enough to know better, probably between 10 and 12 years old, and my brother was being annoying. And it was a Friday afternoon, and I guess things were getting a little bit stressful. Everyone was trying to get ready, and everyone was doing their thing, and I got annoyed at my brother. So I took a cup of grape juice and proceeded to pour it over his head. I don't know. I think it's funny now. But I don't remember what he did to make me so angry at 10 years old. But I remember my mother, you know, didn't help, because my mother got angry at me because my brother, having just been bathed for Shabbos, yeah, wearing his white tzitzis. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it didn't turn out very well for me. But, you know, it's a comical story because we can relate, you know, when we see kids acting out and having a tantrum, it kind of seems comical. But, you know, my husband used to say, you know, when kids would be thrashing around on the floor and having a tantrum, what would happen if adults acted like that, you know? And, you know, sometimes you wonder, sometimes you do see adults that really do look like they're having a temper tantrum. And it's like, really? Really? You know, that might have worked when you were 3 or 4, but it's time to get some new coping mechanisms. So it's funny when you're 10, but we shouldn't be doing that anymore. You know, when we've reached our ages and we've reached, you know, where we are in life. So let's start with the Hebrew, because again, we're pressed for time. We don't have all day, although I wish I did, and I wish I had all week. So let's start with the Hebrew, and then, well, depending on what we have time for, we'll come back to the English things. I did go on aish.com. I found a lot of very, you know, interesting articles that would be interesting as a follow-up, you know, topics such as why am I so angry? How to transform difficult feelings? Some, you know, true techniques. 6 ways, Jewish ways to respond to anger. There's from anger to acceptance. A lot of times, you know, the anger is as a result of things that we have a hard time letting go of. Things that we have that we're having a hard time with, and we're trying to maintain some kind of control over a situation that feels out of our control, where we feel so small and we feel so powerless. And we don't want to accept that situation because it's just so maddening for so many reasons. So some techniques and tips that we could work on for that. And then how to conquer anger. They make it so simple. If you look, it's like a page and a half. Like all the answers, how to conquer anger in a page and a half. So maybe we should read that first, but then there goes my whole lecture. So 6 steps to letting go of anger. And again, you know, very, very interesting things, but we'll leave those for the side for now. Let's start with the Hebrew. So once all those Englishes have passed, so we have the secret to world peace, again, in a page and a half. Then there's dispute or compromise, and then comes the Hebrew. Okay, so we'll start there. It's page 435 is how it's numbered on the Hebrew page. Okay, so it starts off the topic, the theme of this paragraph, HaKelim al pi midas ha-emes. These are vessels that we could use in terms of emes. Emes is honesty, emes is truth, but it talks about kas, it talks about anger here as well. The Rambam kasav be'inyan tikkun hamidos, that the Rambam, Maimonides, gives some advice about how one can correct their character traits. Shetzarich livroach el hakatzeh hasheni va'achar kach lachzor el hamimtsoa. That when one is trying to improve on their character trait, so imagine that there's a line, and you are on one end of the line, and you are feeling like, anger is getting in my way. I want to improve on my anger. So he is giving now a technique. It could be any character trait, but being that we're talking about anger, we'll stick to that. So he tells us if you want to work on a character trait, if you are, say, here, then what you need to do is stretch yourself to go to the opposite extreme, all the way to the opposite, and after some time of working your way to the total opposite, then you can slowly come back to the middle ground to balance out between the extreme you were on to the complete opposite extreme, which would be a little complicated, you know. Some might even use the word doormat at that point, that you're never angry and nothing ever bothers you. It would almost seem not normal or not human, but we'll get to that. L'chora hata'am, and this being because, shekliza yesh cheshash sheyachzor lekilkulo. Because we know that habits become, you know, behaviors become habits, and habits become a part of who we are. So if we're so ingrained to act in a certain way, as much as we try very hard to move away from it, because it's something we're so ingrained on, it's easy to fall back to, because it's like that comfortable shoe, right? I got a new pair of shoes. I was so excited. You know, Baruch Hashem had so many simchas this year. I had a chasana, I had a bar mitzvah, I had a grandchild. I decided I was going to treat myself to a new pair of heels. Those of you who know me, I think you can count on one hand how many times I wear heels. But I think I was feeling very mature, and I decided that I needed to wear heels. So I treated myself to a pair of heels. Nice. Of course, I went to the store. I brought home 5 pairs of heels. I was wearing them around the house trying to decide which one fit. They were all uncomfortable. That's why I don't wear heels. And I, you know, send pictures to my kids. I'm like, which one looks best? Which do you think is... Then I have the whole thing like, is this for my age thing, right? I don't know what age I am. Like, I feel young, but my kids are in their 20s, right? So am I supposed to be wearing the same kinds of things as them? No, I'm supposed to be mature, but I don't want to be mature because I don't want to be matronly, you know, like, what does that mean? So I'm like, okay, can I wear these? Am I too young? Are these too old? You know, the whole deal. So I finally settle on a pair of heels. The other 4 make it back to the store. I bring them to New York with me. I get all dressed. I'm going to my daughter's Shabbat brachas, and I get there. I'm like, nuts, I didn't put on my new shoes. You know, like, I was like, you're kidding me. Like, I got there. I'm like, I can't believe it. You know, like, I did. My shoes were comfortable. But I was like, you know, like, you slip back into the familiar. You slip back into what's comfortable. You slip back into what you enjoy, right? And what seems to be working. So we don't want to slip back. So we need to, like, really, really go to the other way. Aval davar amok yoser yesh bazeh. But it's even deeper than that. It's even more than that, like, default, put on the comfy shoes. Lemashal, for example, yesh aslos v'yesh mesinas. So let's take 2 character traits which have something common in them. Aslos is laziness. Aslus means that a person is sitting around and they're not doing anything. They're not productive. They're procrastinating. They're pushing it off. They're not doing what needs to get done, and what needs to get done is not happening. But the yesh mesinas. Mesinas might look the same. Mesinas looks like a person isn't doing anything, but it's not because they're being lazy. It's because they are processing. So mesinas, I'm going to need help with an English word here, is not determination. What is pondering? Like, what is that? Give me a word to describe, like, when you are...
Contemplation.
Contemplation, thank you. So when you're contemplating, you're thinking about it, you're trying to make an accurate decision, you're trying to collect the information that you have and make a judgment based on the information that you have. So that is contemplation. So two people are sitting on the couch. One person is being lazy and one person is contemplating. To me, on the outside, they're both doing nothing. Right? And I'm getting annoyed because I'm the, you know, like, as you're always calling me mom, the only one who does anything around here. No, one is doing nothing because they just don't feel like it, and the other one is trying to figure out the best way to go about making it happen. Is this the right thing to be doing it now? What's the best way to do it? Perhaps there's another better way. If we have another option, and they're considering their options. Ve'einan koach echad. They're not really one power, one entity. Ve'rak l'mar'eh chitzoni domos. Just to the outside observer, they look exactly the same. Al kein, b'shivro es ha'atzlos. Therefore, if you have this person who's the couch potato, who's sitting on the couch and does nothing, in order for that person to break that habit of being lazy, tzarech l'shavra ad hayisod v'hiyeh zariz l'gamri. So that person was saying, okay, you want to work on your laziness? Here's what you got to do. You have to be super quick. You have to be the Energizer Bunny. You have to be on a spring. And anytime something comes your way, you got to bounce and do it the second you hear about it and do it right away so that you have no chance to sit down on the couch and forget about it and push it off. You have to just be boing, 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 going from activity to activity. V'acharkach. And after all that bouncing around, after some time where it's becoming, you know, a bit habitual for that person to get up and go and to have some momentum, yuchal lahaschio b'mesinas adei ha'emtza. Then you can slowly come back to that contemplation and go slowly towards the middle. So you're going from couch potato to springy, you know, Tigger, you know, like when you're being like that guy in Winnie the Pooh who's always bouncing around, to somewhere in between where you're learning how to have restraint and you're learning how to act. Ve'ein zos atzlos bib miktsas. So misinas contemplation doesn't mean that you are, and it has it in quotes, a little lazy. Contemplation is not just a form of laziness. It's not. Ela mida chadasha. It's actually a new character trait. You've developed a new personality within yourself. Hagivul haraoi bein hazrizas v'hamasinas. So that you've developed for yourself the proper boundary, the proper markings, the proper territory between that swiftness and that contemplation. V'chein v'chol mida umida. This is the same for any character trait. K'she'achar she'birsa chozer le'emtzi yusa. Once you've broken it, then you could go back to the middle. Ein ha'inyan she'chozer al hamida hara'a ha'adishis. I'm sorry. El hara'a ela lemida tova shenir es kimosa. You are not going back to a lesser form of that original characteristic, like a less dangerous form of it. Rather, it's a totally new characteristic. V'chein, and so, mi shenichshal b'ka'as. And for me, I highlighted that word here because we're talking about anger. So too is somebody who is nichshal, who falls or who stumbles or gets stuck in this rut of anger. V'holeich l'kitzei ha'adishis. And woo, has to go to the other side. K'shechozer la'emsa. When he comes back to the middle, Einzos omeres shechozer lemida shakas gover alav. It's not that now he's gotten to the point where the anger is stronger than him, b'miktsas, to a less extent than before. Ki kol shekaaso gover alav hura. Because kaas is the kind of character trait that any form or any amount of kaas, of anger, is not good. So it's not that now, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you are a 100 angry person, and now you're a 90 angry person. That's still not good. That's still not good enough. Ela, chozer lemida acheres. He's becoming a new ingrained character trait. V'hainu shehu gover al ka'aso. That now he's getting to the point where instead of his anger being in control of him, he is being in control of his anger. Umechavein oso lemakom shehu tzarich. And he directs it to the place that's appropriate. There are times when we need to be angry. There are times when we do need to stand up. But it has to be channeled properly. It has to be used in the right way. So anger which is destructive or anger which is just expressive or explosive doesn't serve a purpose. That's a situation where the anger is in control of you. But when you have a handle on your anger and something is upsetting you enough to go on some kind of a campaign, then that gives you the energy to be productive and to be constructive, and you are in control of your anger instead of your anger being in control of you. So, I mean, to make it more personal, there were times in the last 9 years where I have been angry at different circumstances or different people that were supposed to be alleviating my situation. Certain, you know, medical care or medical staff that was supposed to be there to assist my husband in making his life somewhat more bearable, or to give him some kind of techniques or abilities to be able to be more independent or to maintain some sort of, you know, routine. And there were people that fell short. And I have to admit that there were times when I was angry. Really, really angry. And there were times, me, not me, you would never know about that. And there were times when I have to say, I exploded. I did. And then there were times where my explosions went nowhere, because either I exploded to somebody about it, or I exploded to the person, and it didn't make matters better. But then there were times where I used that anger of that wanting things to be better for him, that I was able to channel that energy to become a more, took me time to be less aggressive, but to become more of a advocate for him, and to be able to try my best to get him, you know, services that he was entitled to or eligible for. So there's channeling, and, you know, it's a work in progress, you know, it's a work in progress. I'm not going to, you know, be honest to admit that there were times when my anger was uncalled. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm not ready to say that it was uncalled for. I'm ready to say that I didn't handle it in the right way. But to be able to channel it and to be able to use that energy to channel it in the right direction and to make something positive come out of it. And that's what we're going to see now, how their anger, these mitzri angers, was destructive. It was exactly producing the opposite effect of what they wanted. So let's explore some more. Let's turn the page one. We have another English, which says Keeping the Peace, page 64. So we'll be on the page right after that. Okay, so we'll see some information about we all are aware of that anger can be destructive, but let's see what the sources say about that. So on page Kuf Nun Aleph, top left corner, it says Kuf Nun Aleph, and it's the first Hebrew page after page 64. Okay. So I have this listed as, for me, I labeled this as number four, a fourth discussion for today. V'chein b'midas ha-ka'as amru. And so too, in the realm of anger, here's what our rabbis, our sages have said. Kol adam she-ko-es. Any person who gets angry, im chacham hu, if he is a wise man, chachmaso mistalekes mimeno, then it causes his wisdom to disappear. He loses a bit of that wisdom. That even no matter how great or how smart a person is, when a person is in the midst of anger, they will lose their rational thinking. And, for example, Moshe. Examples are, we're going to see how even Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the leader of the Jewish people, who spent time 40 days up on Har Sinai, getting the Torah, learning directly from Hashem, how there was times when he got angry, and because of that, there was a consequence. And here's what it says. Shaharei Moshe, that Moshe, b'sha'a shekatzaf al pikudei hachayil, nis'alma mimeno halacha shogeolo kalei midyan. That there was a time at the end, I believe it's in Devarim, Bamidbar or Devarim, I'm not as centuri, I forgot to look it up, where Moshe got angry at some of the officers of the Jewish people, and the incident right after, where there was a halacha, there was some kind of ruling that he was supposed to give based on some kind of when Midian started up with the Jewish people, as we spoke about the other day, and Midian offered their daughters to sin with the Jewish men. There was a question, once that war was over, once they dealt with that situation, there was a question of what should be done with the vessels of the Midianim. Like, what is the halacha pertaining to vessels which were used by the Midian people? And Moshe did not know the halacha right away, because he had been upset at a situation that happened due to that whole incident. Uvi Yoser, and also, Ro'im Anu Es Hashpasa Hashlilish Shalmidas HaKa'as. We see the the effect and the influence of the character trait of Kaas. V'es Seir HaChatas Darash Darash Moshe V'hinei Saraf V'yiktof El Eliezer V'el Isamar B'nei Aaron. So another situation was that Moshe was upset about something. He was upset about the Nadav and Avihu, that were two sons of Aaron, who it tells us that they died because of a sin that they did. And there's different explanations as to what actually the sin was. But in essence, it involved them bringing an offering that they were not supposed to bring at the time. And the reason they weren't supposed to bring it at the time was because they learned that matter on their own. They came to that conclusion on their own rather than getting advice from Moshe, who was considered their leader, their teacher, and they should have waited until they received the order from him. But instead, they did it on their own, and then once that happened, his family members, until they were buried, were considered an onain. They are considered a relative who has lost an immediate relative until the time of burial. An onain is not allowed to perform any mitzvos. So if a person is waiting for the burial of their immediate family members, it shouldn't happen to us, but at that point they wouldn't be allowed to make a bracha, they wouldn't be allowed to learn Torah, and anything else, because there's a rule in the Torah that ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. When you're involved with one mitzvah, you're excused from doing others. So if I'm in the middle of helping my mother and somebody comes to the door to collect charity, I don't have to go running to answer the door because I'm in the middle of one mitzvah. So I don't have to stop one mitzvah to do another because I'm already involved with one. So there's actually, just as a tangent, there's a kiddie song about doing mitzvos. And we often when the song was taught to my kids, we actually had a question about it. It says something to the effect of, when a mitzvah comes my way, I'll do them all at once. Right? So if you think about it, I think the point of the message is that you're trying to teach kids to, when you chance upon a mitzvah, to do it right away and not to lose the chance. So if your mother asks you to help, you help. If your father asks you to help, you help. If, you know, you want to make a bracha, you make a bracha. Like, kind of like you're supposed to do it at once. But if you read it, I do them all at once, like at one time, that would not be accurate. You're not allowed to do all the mitzvahs at once, right? At once. So you hear how like the emphasis on the, which way we're phrasing that at once. So you can't. So therefore, because they were an onain, because they were not, they were waiting for the burial, the question was, were they allowed to be eating or not from certain parts of karbanos? We know that the kohanim have certain portions in whatever offerings are given on that day. Were they allowed to eat from the offering or not before the burial of the two sons? So it tells us, ba'lichlal ka'as, ba'lichlal ta'us. Moshe Rabbeinu, because he had made a mistake, he erred, and he was not sure of whether or not they were allowed to have these portions during this Anina's time or not. So let's continue, though, and we go to the top of the page, because we actually, because think about it. We are questioning of Moshe's anger. So again, we see that the Torah doesn't hide things under the rug, that when our leaders make a mistake, they are written out in the Chumash, they are written out in the Navi, they are written in the Torah for us to learn about and to process what their error was, whether it's on, you know, quote-unquote a full scale or a smaller scale, because they are on a higher level than we are, and they are judged at a more stringent level than we are. Often things which we see as incorrect, maybe the Torah doesn't see as incorrect, or things that we may see as incorrect are not as great as it seems to our eyes, because the Torah has chosen to blow it up. The Torah has chosen to take it out so that we can examine it more. So for example, if you look at this table, it looks nearly empty. There's only a tablecloth on it. What we don't see are all those creepy crawly things, like all the germs and all the bacteria that are really on the clean tablecloth. We don't see them. It looks fine, fortunately, yeah. But if we were to take a swab of the tablecloth and put it under a microscope, and we would enlarge whatever microorganism is on there to a bigger scale, it would seem huge. Like, we'd be like, oh my gosh, like, what do you mean you didn't see it? It's like the size of an alligator. Like, how could you not see it? It's the size of a bee. You know, like, it's multiplied, like a microorganism to the size of a bee would be like multiple times. And you're looking and saying, well, how could you not notice that? It's huge. Well, yes, because you're looking under a microscope. So too, like when we enlarge and we look at the errors of our leaders, what do you mean it's not a mistake? It's huge. Well, yeah, because you're looking at it from under the microscope. And it's being blown up. It's taken out of context so you could study it, so you can examine it. Like a scientist wants to learn, well, how does bacteria work? How does it multiply? How does it spread? So they have to blow it up to see it in more detail and to learn about its components. So that's what we're doing. So Moshe was a human. Moshe had character traits. Moshe had a lifetime of work to work on himself to get to the level that he became. But we see that even on his level, there was a what we use the expression of daki daka, is like a fine, something that was a snitch off, something that was just a little bit incorrect. And that's what we want to take out to learn that everyone has these struggles. There's no one that doesn't have this struggle. And again, some of us have it more, some of us have it less. But what was Moshe doing? Moshe was upset at them because they did something wrong. Was his anger justified? Was he allowed to be angry at that time? He's the teacher of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people and the Kohanim have different rules and regulations that they need to follow, and somebody didn't follow what they were supposed to be doing. Fair or not? Yeah, right? He was the leader. He was the one who had to teach them. They were the one that followed the incorrect ruling. He had to tell them what was wrong. It was accurate. We would say, well, why shouldn't he be angry? Yes, of course. He was justified to be angry. And what we're going to see is, yes, he was justified. But what we're going to see in the second paragraph, Ella, rather, Mikan Atala made, from here you learn, She'af Ka'as, that even when one is angry, Shehu Alpi Din, that it is halachically okay, that it's purely justified, for whatever reason, purely justified, Gam Hu Goreim, She'tishkach Mimenu HaTorah. Despite it being okay, it still does cause a loss of Torah knowledge, a loss of wisdom. Ve'ein zeh b'toras onesh klal. But we shouldn't look at it as a punishment. Right? You can't say, okay, you got angry, I'm going to take it away from you now. You were smart, you got angry, you're not going to be so smart now, you're not going to know something. It's not a punishment. It's not like that. Ella, rather, Shekol HaKo'es, whoever gets angry, Chachmaso Mistalekes Heimeno, his smartness, his wisdom, like, disappears. It ebbs. It leaves him. Mitzias He, it is a reality. V'chein Hu Teva HaDvarim, this is the nature of all things. It's a natural result. K'shem Shehasakin Choteches, just as a knife can cut. V'ha'esh sorefes, and fire can burn. Af es mi shehu onus ve'eino ashem klal. So if I'm using a knife, even by accident, I might cut myself. Right? I had that Purim night. I decided to be nice. There was one person fasting in my house, my son who was just bar mitzvah. And I felt bad for him because the other kids were younger and I had broken my fast. I felt bad for him that at the end of the day, he was the only one fasting. Decided I'm going to be nice. I'm going to make him some nice, I was going to make him some challah rolls to break his fast on. I was a little bit too ambitious and I went to hack the dough. And yeah, the rest, you could figure out the rest. And I spent, the night after Megillah getting stitches at the Queensway. So, it wasn't something, it's just knives are dangerous. I wasn't being reckless. I wasn't wielding the knife, but knives are sharp and I missed. V'lachin, and therefore, af shekaaso haya kedin, even though his anger was justified, al shehoro halacha bifnei rabam, because they went against their teacher, they made that decision on their own without having waited for their rabbi to tell them what to do. Af al pichin, even though, and despite this, mi sheba lichal kaas nisalma mimenu hahalacha, he was justified, but it's a natural tendency. Anger will cause you to lose your knowledge. And then that the Amar Lahem, and he said to them, Madua lo achaltem, why didn't you eat the portions that you were supposed to eat? And it was them who had to remind him that they were not allowed to be eating those portions at that time, as it was the time of mourning for their brothers. Va'amru Chazal, and our rabbis teach, Shemosh Rabbeinu, Hotzi Kiruz L'chol HaMachaneh, Moshe went out and he made a huge announcement. Do you need a pile? Moshe went out and made an announcement L'chol HaMachaneh, to the entire camp of the Jewish people, to all 603-550 people. Ve'amar, and he said, Ani ta'isi es ha'halacha, I made a mistake about the law. Va'aron achi, and my brother Aaron bavili madeli, and he taught it to me. So not only is he human in the fact that he erred, he made a mistake, but I would say that he was probably superhuman in the fact that he admitted his mistake in public and apologized for it. V'nir'eh, and it seems, shemifnei chen shalach lefarsem hadavar, and because of this he decided that he had to publicize this event. Sheratza sheyilmedu mimenu kol Yisrael, that as the teacher of the Jewish people, he wanted everyone to learn from him as well. Kama gadol hu kocha shel midah, how strong is the power of a character trait. Sheaf shayaka aso kedin, even though he was justified, garam lo lish kachas hahalacha, it made him forget the halacha. So it was a warning to others. It happened to me. Be careful. It could happen to you. And then we skip. And we skip two pages. So now I am on, it says Sichos Musar on top. In the middle of the page, it says Genus HaKa'as. So Genus HaKa'as, Genus is shame. It's embarrassment. It's the derogatory nature of anger. So let's see what we have. Ma'amarim harbe matzinu b'divrei Chazal. There have been many, many discussions, many works based on the rabbi's teaching, bignus midos hachesed, about the dangers or about the embarrassment of the character trait of anger. Amar Rava Bar Ravi, I'm not sure who Reish Hay stands for, another rabbi he's quoting. Kol hakoes, afilu shechina eino chashuva kinegdo. If somebody gets angry, in the moments of their anger, they forget everything. Everything else becomes obsolete. They're just caring about what it is that they're angry at the moment, that even they could forget about Hashem. In the time of their anger, they're not thinking about Hashem. Rabbi Yirmiyahu midefisi amar, and it's quoting a rabbi, Mishechach Talmudo Umosif Tipshus, that someone who gets angry, the Shekhinah is not important to him, and that it just ends up that he ends up adding on to his foolishness. When somebody is in the heat of anger and they start to act foolishly, it ends up that they become more and more foolish. And he quotes a pasuk in Koheles, which says, Ki ka'as b'chik kesilim yanuach, that when somebody is angry, they end up being foolish. And let's skip to the second to last line in that paragraph. Kol hako eis, kol mine gehenim sholtim bo. It tells us that when somebody is angry, all kinds of gehenim, all kinds of hell rule over him. V'haser ka'as milipcha, v'haver ra'a mibsarecha. In Koheles, we are warned that one should try to remove anger from their hearts and to take away the bad from their flesh. V'ein ra'a ela gehenim. And that is, you know, we use the word gehenim, which is the Hebrew word for the word hell, which is a purification place where souls go to undergo purification process for what they have done in this world. Ach milvad ha'onshim haba'im al ha'ko'es. There are different kinds of punishments or consequences that come to somebody who gets angry. Goreim ha'ka'as la'adam. It causes a person le'rein mimadrega so ula'aved es ma'alosav ha'ruchnios. So it's a tie-in, it's similar to what we said before, that when one is angry, so a natural consequence is that whatever level, spiritual level they were on, whatever rung they were on, when they are angry, it causes them to come down, you know, I guess depending on how angry they are, how many rungs. But a person who is angry and being on a spiritual high are not synonymous. You can't, if you're angry, then you can't be on the same spiritual level as before. And then it tells us, Kol Shekoes, we skip down about five lines, Kol Shekoes, whoever is angry, Afilu Poskim Alav Gedula, even if that person was destined for greatness in heaven, Min Hashamayim, Moridim Oso, that person gets taken down from their level of greatness. For example, Eliyav. So who was Eliyav? Eliyav was the brother of David HaMelech. And Shmuel was the Navi at the time who was told to go and anoint a new king for the Jewish people. Shaul, we just discussed Shaul the other day. Shaul was the first king of the Jewish people. And one of his mitzvos, one of his requirements was that he was supposed to annihilate Amalek. And he did not. I mean, the end of the story from the other day is that as much as he was supposed to annihilate the entire Amalek, for reasons that we discussed, he did not completely carry through. There were some survivors of Amalek, which led to, years later, it led to the story of Purim, because Haman came from Amalek, Haman came from Agag, they were all interrelated, and it caused further problems for the Jewish people years down the road. So, because Shaul had made a sin, Shaul had made a mistake, and Hashem told Shaul that had he just admitted his sin, Hashem could have forgiven him for it, and all would have been well. But because Shaul tried to justify his sin and explain why he did what he did and why he was right for doing what he did, he lost his kingdom. He and his descendants could not be king for longer than him. The kingdom, the dynasty ended with him. So at the time, Shmuel was told to go and to pick a new king. This was still under the radar. The Jewish people didn't know yet that this was happening, that there was going to be another king anointed yet, but the prophet was in the know, and he had to go to the home of Yishai and pick one of the sons to be king. Yishai had seven sons, and when Shmuel saw Eliyav, he thought that Eliyav was going to be the one that was destined for greatness because he looked aristocratic, he looked like a kingly figure, he seemed to have good manners, he seemed to be charismatic, or whatever, you know, whatever one would be looking for in a king. However, there's a story that Shmuel did not see, that Shmuel did not know. And that is that when David's brothers were out at a war, and David was sent by the father to go and check up on them and see how they're doing. When he got there, he was mocked by his brothers. And he was told, go home, you don't belong here, this is not for you, you're just a child, go home. And he got angry, and Eliyav, it says that Eliyav got angry. So it tells us when Shmuel was looking at the sons, and he thinks, oh, Eliyav is going to be the one, Hashem says, no, he can't. Ki me'astihu, I am despised with him, I'm disgusted with him, because he is the type of person that gets angry. So yes, he does look like he could have had the persona to be a king, but because of his anger issues, he would be, you know, dethroned before he ever came to that level. So it's showing us how a person's anger will bring them down from a level or from any destiny to greatness that they could have had. Vihine, and behold, haderech laharchik minafshosenu esmidas kaas. So great. How do we, you know, barring that page and a half, how do we stay away from kaas? How do we stay away from anger? Bevadaihi al yedei limud v'hisponenus rabah b'divrei chazal b'ganus midas ha'kaas. So his suggestion is that we should understand and we should learn more about the dangers of kas. How do you become knowledgeable about something? How do you become an expert at something? By collecting information, by studying it, by observing it, and by becoming more aware of it. So he says that we need to do that. We need to learn. We might not realize just how devastating anger is. The more we learn about it, the more we know about it, the more hopefully it will register with us. Ulam kiyem adayin lefanenu makom michshal. There are times when we might be nichshal, where we might trip, we might stumble, we might fall, we might make a mistake. Ki kesheba adam lechal kas. When we get angry, notehu ladun shekasohu bitzedek. We tend to justify ourselves. In a situation when we are angry, in a situation when we are upset, we tend to justify ourselves. We feel that we are right. Ulefetach zeh chatas rovates. And that is an expression, lefetach chatas rovates, means that it's crouched. Just imagine a jack-in-the-box. I don't even think kids play with that anymore. Like, I'm suddenly feeling so old because things are just changing so quickly. Toys that I played with that probably even, like, I don't know, our mothers and grandmothers played with, kids don't play with those things anymore, right?
What's
those little...
Toy?
What? A jack-in-the-box?
No, no, a toy. What's a toy?
Oh, it's a toy. Pretty much, you know.
Isn't that something that you...
Something.
Box?
Yeah, it's like that, you know. I don't know. But, you know, you had this... It was metal. Right, back in the day it was metal, a metal box with a wooden turning thing, and you crank and crank and crank, and you know, this ugly looking scary, I mean, those things were scary, no? Are those for kids? Those clowns were scary. This hideous clown would pop up. So that's what it's telling us. Ka'as is like that. The Eitzahara is like that. It's like that jack in the box, and it could spring out at you and bump out at you at any time. Ki midas ha-ka'as me'aves eshikul ha-da'as. It distorts our balance of thought. We can't think rationally. Uvatuach hu shekaso hu kadin. And we are so sure that we are justified. Ach kishenisbonein b'divrei chazal. But when we take a moment to ponder and to process the words of the rabbis, nimtza sha'af ka'ashahu kadin, even if we're justified. And, you know, in the paragraph and the parts that we skipped or the parts we'll get to, it's going to talk about the same situation that we gave with Moshe. Justified. Teacher teaching a student. The student made a mistake. Still, go reim la adam la aveid es ma'alo sav ulared es mimadrega. So it still causes a person to decline. And it tells us in the next paragraph, we're not going to go through all of them, but as we mentioned before, there was one, but the paragraph describes that there were actually shlosha mikomos. There were three places where Moshe ka'as, that Moshe got angry, and as a result, nis'alma mimenu ha-halacha. That the immediate incident right after, he wasn't able to process what the right law was, and to say what the actual law was. So we'll label it as three. Number one, b'Shabbos, there was a situation about, you know, where he told the Jews not to leave out man for Shabbos, and he neglected to tell them because Dasan and Aviram had left out man, so he had forgotten to tell them. So it's something with the man and the rules of Shabbos. Number two, b'Kalei Mateches, that's referred to before about those iron weapons that with the war with Midian, who caused the Jewish people to sin with their men. And then the other one that we refer to, Be'onain, when the children of Aaron said that they were not allowed to eat from the portions that Moshe told them that they could. And the next through paragraphs discuss each one at greater length about what this situation was and how it came to that. So in essence of time, we're just going to skip to the third paragraph, the second one from the bottom. The Afalpi. And even though, that even though he was justified and everything made sense, he still lost the halacha. The fact that he lost his chachma, the fact that he did not know the answer to the question, which should have been basic for him, eino onesh al aveiras hakas, it wasn't a punishment. Elahu inyan tivi. It's a natural consequence. You know, we find that when we talk about rewarding and punishing children, there's all kinds of different philosophies and all kinds of methods out there. So are you supposed to punish a kid, or it's, you know, it's a consequence? You know, consequence, I think, is supposed to sound, you know, less invasive or more, you know, nicey-nicey, you know, like, are you punished? You know, you hit your sister, so you go to your room? It's a punishment. Or you hit your sister, you weren't sharing your toys, you hit her in the head with the toy, so it makes sense that you can't use the toy now. It's a consequence. It's a natural reaction. So, you know, we use the terminology, I guess, well, you know, we won't, get petty on the nuances of the word, but it's not a punishment. Okay, you did this, and now you can't have this. But it just, it flows. It ebbs, and it continues into that. So let's go now on the next page. In the third paragraph from the bottom, it's labeled Sichos Musar, and it says Shin Ayin Vav on the top right corner. And the third paragraph on the bottom, about halfway down, starting on the left side, B'techila. You see where I am? B'techila. So in the beginning, we're going to discuss now about the, because it ties into what we're doing, the difference between Torah knowledge, and like, for example, Moshe lost some of his Torah knowledge and his ability to answer halachic questions, versus other knowledge, versus math knowledge or science knowledge. B'techila hinekreis Torah Hashem. At the beginning, when one takes out a chumash, and we are going to learn and we're going to study Torah like we are today, we're studying chumash today, there's different references to the Torah in different verses of the rabbis. So it's referred to as Torah Hashem, the Torah of Hashem, because Hashem is the author of the Torah. Hashem is the one who gave the Torah. It's His. V'girsahi nekreis Torah So. And it's referred to as His Torah. But what we are going to see, that as the word Torah So, as one learns the Torah, as one studies the Torah, and begins to have ownership of the Torah, and it becomes a part of him, there are other verses in the Torah where it says that this is that it becomes the Torah of the person. So, Ela lehefech, HaTorah nish'eres Torah Hashem. The Torah is still the Torah of Hashem. Hashem authored it, Hashem gave it, it's His, we study it. Ela, rather, Sheha'adam zoche, that a person merits, Shehu atzmo nehefach lehiyos Torah. That by learning Torah and studying the Torah that Hashem gave to us, it changes us. It makes us a different person. It makes us a better in person. It helps us to improve ourselves. V'lachein hi kruya Torah so. And that is why it will still be called the Torah of Hashem, even when it becomes our Torah, even when we acquire the Torah for ourselves. And we have like an ownership, or a mastery, like we have mastery over the Torah. We've come together this whole week to learn Torah from many different teachers in all different styles, all different varieties, all different topics. Like, you're now like, you're mastering Torah, you're acquiring Torah. You have so many opportunities to make it your own, to hear it, to learn it, to take it into practical application, to carry it on into your life, to encourage you to go to more Torah classes and to learn more things. V'nimtza she'ein ha-Torah kish'ar chachmos she'heim ha-sagos sha'adam masig b'sichlo. That's what makes Torah different. When you sit here or in any other Torah class, it's not just an intellectual pursuit. It's not just now I know another X amount of verses of the Torah. It's not. It changes you. It becomes who you are. It's something that you internalize. It's something that you heard. It's something that becomes a part of you, and it becomes a part of your makeup. You're living and you're breathing Torah. You become Torah. Ela haTorah nasays etzem nisiyoso. You become intertwined. It becomes a part of you. There's an expression that says, Chachma bagayim ta'amin. If somebody tells you that other cultures, other natures have knowledge, have wisdom, ta'amin. You could believe that. It's true. There's all kinds of studies out there. There's all kinds of pursuits. Math, sciences, you name it. It's all out there. Literature. It's all there. And fine, fair enough. There are many things in there that are not contrary to what we believe. We can accept that knowledge. We can accept that wisdom. And even if there are things that are contrary to our moral or ethical beliefs, we can say, that's fine. That works for them. It doesn't work for me. We can agree to that. But Torah Bagoyim, if somebody says that the non-Jews have a Torah, like a Bible, something that guides them for their life, like a life, you know, a recipe for life, a book, Al Tamin. That we can't believe. That it's not the same. Our Torah can't be compared to their Torah. And if we just look at the study of man, of all these people, like great philosophers, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, people who wrote books and books, you know, wisdom, brilliant, brilliant people. But somehow their education and their teaching didn't filter down to who they were as a person. It didn't change them. They were of, you know, morally deprived people. It didn't change them. That can't happen to a person when they learn Torah. When a person learns Torah, it may take time. And sometimes it may take more learning. But inevitably, it like filters down. And it becomes who we are. It tells us that the Torah is compared to water. The Torah is compared, there's so many things that the Torah is compared to. Water, to milk. These are things which are life, you know, life-giving and, you know, life-altering things that we can't live without. If we take the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, when he was 40 years old and he wanted to go and to study and to learn Torah, and he was regretting his decision. He wasn't so sure if he was making the right move, and how on his path he stopped and he contemplated and he was thinking, and, you know, back to that contemplation, we can tie it all together. He was contemplating. He wasn't being lazy. He wasn't just sitting there and saying, no, I'm not going to learn. He was contemplating. And he saw a rock. And he saw that there was a drip, right? There was some kind of a leak. There was some kind of running off of water. And it had penetrated a rock. There was a hole in the rock. And he said to himself, and it is quoted in the Gemara, he said to himself, well, if, you know, water, which is one drop, it's there's no damage, right? One drop of water won't do damage. But drops upon drops, and it's poking on and it's attacking the same area again and again, it becomes strong enough that it can even infiltrate a rock. So too, the Torah infiltrates us. The more we know, the more we learn, it becomes more of a part of us and it grows within us. So that is just, you know, like when a person then gets angry. So it's kind of a dichotomy. Like you can't have both at the same time. When a person is angry, that also changes them and also throws them off kilter. So the things, the information, the wisdom, the knowledge that we've acquired gets thrown off kilter from the fact that our mind is not thinking coherently and we're not processing accurately and correctly. So too, our Torah thoughts and our wisdom will also be altered by that anger as well. So let's take a look and see what can we do about that. And in the 10 minutes that we have left or so, maybe even a little bit less, let's see what we can do. So let's try keeping the peace. Okay, page 64. We'll take a very, pretty famous story. You might have come across this before. The story of Sarah and Abraham. So Abraham is recovering from his bris milah, from his circumcision. And three guests come to meet him. And one of their jobs is to visit him, to heal him, to help him recuperate from his illness. One of them comes to advise him that the city of Sodom is going to be destroyed. And one of them comes to share the news that Sarah is going to have a child. Sarah is not outside with the guests. Sarah is inside the tent. She overhears the conversation and she laughs. Right? Sarah's reaction that she laughs and she says, that's kind of impossible. How will I have a child? My husband is too old. And it was not about her, it was about him. And then later on in the conversation that Hashem has with Abraham, He says to Avram that when Sarah heard the news, she said that she can't see this happening because she said she is too old. Sounds like a lie if I ever heard one, right? That's not what happened. That's not what Sarah said. Hashem, was he being truthful, right? Hashem, who teaches us to have emes, to have honesty, to be truthful. Was he being truthful to Abraham? When Hashem told Abraham about Sarah's comment, the Torah says that she had laughed because Sarah felt that she was too old. Rashi states that the Torah changed the wording of Sarah's statement for the sake of shalom, peace, between Abraham and Sarah. Did the Torah actually have to make this change? Abraham and Sarah had been together for so long and loved each other so much. They had each refined their midah to a great degree of perfection. Would her statement actually have created any harsh feelings between her and Abraham? Really, they were like 90 years old and 100, you know, 90, 89 and 99 years old at that point, respectively. You know, it's they've been around for a long time. The Torah is teaching us an invaluable lesson in how careful we have to be when dealing with the feelings of others. Abram's hurt would have been even minute, probably even non-existent. Yet the Torah went to great lengths and even changed its wording to avoid it. When dealing with our family and friends, we feel so close to them that we often ignore the fact that they can become insulted or angry with us. The Torah expects us to be conscientious and caring to the utmost degree. This example set by Hashem of caring for our fellow Jew must be in our minds and follow us through our daily activities. So this works if we are the one causing someone else to be angry. How can we, you know, cause others to get along with us is by us getting along with them, by keeping in mind, you know, ways to keep them happy and not to upset them. Then that actually prevents a full-scale, you know, revolt or some kind of war from taking place. We all know that sometimes, you know, it happens in, even in families, that there's some kind of family dispute. And there are people, different sides of the family, or people in our family that we're not talking to for whatever reason. There's different relatives. And it gets to a point where nobody even knows who's not talking to each other and why they're not talking to each other. But we just know we don't talk to them. But nobody knows why. And everyone's afraid to make the first move. But that's because of there was, at some point, there must have been some kind of ka'as. There was some kind of anger. There was something that somebody said or did that somebody took offense to. And, you know, on the principle of the matter, that's it. Well, I don't know what the principle of the matter was. The other person doesn't know what the matter is. Maybe they do know what the matter is. But we see that very often things can get blown up. Things can get taken out of context. Things can really blow because of something that was said or done without, you know, even sometimes even without realizing it, and without even, and it gets continued without even knowing why. So let's look again. Sorry, I'm just trying to find it. Here we go. Let's look for the page 244. So I think it's about three pages before the one that we just did. So again, we don't have time to go through all of it together, but let's just take an example. And I think this example brings home the idea, and I think with this we'll wrap up for now. I'm on page 244, Pinnacle of Creation. Imagine that you have a gas leak in your home, or you suspect that you have a gas leak in your home. You're not sure. So you have a carbon monoxide detector, which is supposed to ring or alert you to some degree if there's something off. But we had that once where I had a carbon monoxide detector. It wasn't doing anything. It wasn't alarming. There was no sound. There was no indication from it. But when I walked by a certain area of the house, something smelled funny. It had like I guess you could say it smelled like gas, even though we know gas doesn't have a smell. It's the smell that they put into the gas so that we could smell it, so we know that it's leaking. And I wasn't really sure what to do about it. I figured it's probably nothing, but, you know, you hear too many stories and you get nervous, so you decide that you're better safe than sorry. So you call the gas company, and, you know, they, you know, push one for this, push two for that. Yes, suspected gas leak. They say, okay, we'll be over as soon as possible. But whatever you do, like, don't use your phone, don't start up the oven, don't do anything that could cause a spark. And I said, okay, great. So when you come, you'll ring the bell so I know you're here. And they go, no, no, no. And that's what's on the bottom of page 245. The gas technician who's coming to my home to check if I have a gas leak will never ever ring the bell. He'll knock on the door. Why? Because if there really is a gas leak and he rings the bell, that could ignite a spark, which will in turn blow up the whole house if there really is a gas leak. So no, a gas technician will never ring your bell. They will knock. And that is the mashal that is done, that is given on the end of this page. That when we have relationships with people, we should treat our relationship with people as if we are a gas technician. As if we are coming to a situation which could be, I mean, obviously, you know, in a healthy relationship, healthy conversation, it's not going to blow up that rapidly. But we should be realizing that when we have conversations or when we're in certain situations, it could be a volatile situation. Things can explode at any minute. Things can unravel really, really quickly. Somebody says something or looks the wrong way or says the wrong thing, and then there's ka'as, then there's anger, then there's fight, then there's strife, there's rift between people, and it tells us that, you know, this, the question of this topic is dispute or compromise, like discussing that if people get into a fight or when people come get to a fight, they will need to go and seek a third party to help them out. So the question is like, well, okay, that makes sense, you know, and it discusses about why a person who gets into a disagreement with another person will need mediation. Why can't they just, okay, so if I'm upset at you and you're upset at me, let's be adults, let's talk about it, let's work it out. Because it's easier said than done. Because once you start putting in my biases, my feelings, your feelings, and everyone's, you know, principles of the matter, it becomes really, really challenging to mediate our own disagreements. And we'll end up needing a third party. So I think with that, we'll have to stop and we'll say that what we can do now is at least be aware that it's something that we know. But again, that's the key to Musar, is just reminding yourself and repeating the thoughts again of what you know and what is seems so obvious, but when push comes to shove, it's not as obvious as it seems. But to remind ourselves that when we deal with other people, it really is inherent upon us to keep the peace. And it's inherent on us to keep things even-kiltered so that we don't explode and that we don't cause another person to explode. And in that way, we'll increase the peace between us and between our friends, between our neighbors, between our family members. And that's, in essence, one of the ways that we can, you know, enjoy the life that we are given and appreciate everything that, you know, other people have done for us or that is given to us in this world. And I thank you so much for letting me be here. And I have enough material to do Thursday and Friday. But we'll have to save that for another time. Thank you.
Thank you.